Data Stories number 19 with Moritz and our special guest today, Santiago Ortiz. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, doing great.
Hi, Enrico.
Hi, Santiago.
Hi, Enrico. Hi, Moritz.
Yeah.
Great to have you.
Thanks.
We have three continents today. Fantastic.
That's true.
That's true.
Big triangle here.
Iceland, Antarctica. Antarctica.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are the great circle of data visualization.
Yeah. How is it going, guys? Moritz?
Good, busy. I'm teaching.
You're teaching?
So,
wow.
Yeah, I'm right in between my course. Mm. Usually I brag how bad a teacher I am, so I can continue to do that.
So if you are teaching,
I have 20 students and they do interesting stuff, and now they're all like in between and they have some data, but they don't know yet quite what to do with it. So it's interesting times.
It's a good time to quit.
Exactly.
You have the data. You already know things going to be very difficult.
Yeah. No, but all of them collect sort of unique data or, I don't know, at least assemble new data sets. So I think that's fantastic. And yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Great. Okay.
So if you are teaching, I should be designing, right?
Yeah, that would make sense.
But I'm actually,
are you?
No, I'm not. I'm teaching. I'm teaching as well.
Too bad.
Yeah. And you, Santiago, how is it going?
Things are going very well. I am also very busy, but I am working on interesting projects. I just arrived from Nashville,
where I met you.
Exactly.
Where we met.
And it was fantastic experience, fantastic conference, and talk with a lot of people,
Tapestry.
Including you.
Yeah.
Tapestry, fantastic.
Yeah. Tapestry was great. I really, really enjoyed it. It's one of the best events I've attended during the last few years. It's been really great. And I was surprised. I met so many people who actually dropped by and said, "Hey, Data Stories, cool."
Great.
Did you wear your Data Stories T-shirt and your Data Stories cap?
Somebody actually asked for the Data Stories T-shirt. I was a bit,
we can do that sometimes.
It makes sense because the conference was quite related with your work and with Data Stories itself.
Yeah, that's true. We even picked the right name.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it was just one day, right? So
it seemed
really quick. Yeah, so I sort of followed it on Twitter, and it was like everybody was like super excited, writing a lot, and then it was over again. I was like, oh yeah, it's just one day.
So fast, and but the conferences were so well chosen. Like, you had like very different approaches, and some of them were like very rational towards like storytelling, and other conferences, including the last one by Scott McCloud, was storytelling itself was like a fantastic experience. So I think that was part of the nice experience there. And then in the middle, some people were allowed to demo or to feature projects. I was there demoing my work, and it also was great. Yes, I talked with, I don't know, hundreds of people. I don't know, at least tens.
Wow.
No, I don't know. It was intensive, but fantastic.
Yeah, there was a full cluster of people in the room around Santiago.
Like reporters with cameras, flashlights.
Yeah.
Mr. Ortiz, one more question.
No, don't remember that exactly, but a lot of questions, yes. A lot of conversations.
Nice. Yeah. That's great. Yeah,
and honestly, the event was fantastic. The speakers were amazing. I mean, all of them were really...
What was your favorite?
I think my absolute favorite was Scott McCloud.
Mm-hmm,
I think he really did a show. It was fantastic. Awesome. I mean...
Very difficult to beat.
Sorry?
Very difficult to beat. He's a professional. He's... telling stories and presenting images and writing new concepts out of new images.
And honestly, I mean, I was surprised by the depth of his thinking. I mean, he was not just showing stuff. He was actually, at least from my opinion, is that he was actually presenting things that actually made me think a lot, and it shows that what he presents is probably the result of many years of thinking about it, and
it's, decades basically.
Yeah, maybe
books
decades.
Are 25 years old.
It's
the first
really
one, yeah,
deep.
So, yeah,
it's really sure. deep. But look, I mean, he was my favorite one, but the others were fantastic as well. So we had Pat Hendren from Stanford. So mm-hmm. maybe people who are not in academia might actually not know him well, but in academia he's a superstar, right? Mm-hmm. And sure. I mean, he's the person behind Pixar, okay? Mm-hmm. And then, so he's been doing graphics for a very long time, and then he's been doing lots of visualization stuff as well. He's really a big, big name. And he was fun as well. He pretended to show some mathematical demonstration visually. I think after a couple of minutes, the whole audience was lost, apart from a couple of geeks. But the way he presented it was really, really nice. Every time he speaks, it makes me think about something new. And he was great. And then we had a couple of people from New York Times, and they have shown fantastic stuff as well. Who else we had? I mean, Santiago. I think every single speaker was really, really great.
Indeed. I enjoyed also Nigel Holmes because...
Oh, Nigel. Yeah, Nigel was...
Nigel, sorry.
Nigel, yes. yeah.
Nigel Blue.
Nigel is a character. Oh,
Nigel is really good because he's explaining stuff and acting.
Acting, yeah.
He was playing a lot. It was great. It was fantastic. And he made this trick with a rope. With the exact length of the world record of long jumping, which is something unbelievable when you see the actual distance that a human being can jump, and I
like 39 feet,
yes,
or something
exactly.
like that. Yeah.
And he started with that trick, and the audience were totally cocked, and then he started like introducing more theoretical stuff, but it was fantastic. Yes. Nigel, mm-hmm. yeah, and I had the opportunity to talk with him,
in the
demoing session, and it was fantastic. It was great.
He's super nice.
He's super nice.
We could have him, Enrico. We could invite him too.
Oh,
he has
please
a totally
do that.
Different
yes.
perspective, and he's been around forever, and he's,
he has
a lot.
Probably gonna listening to this episode because he was totally hooked when we talked about it.
Very good.
So,
hi, Nigel.
Hi, Nigel.
Hi, Nigel. Hi, Nigel.
Hi, Nigel.
We make a blue episode.
Yeah,
Nigel.
We have to make a blue episode. Absolutely.
We can change the whole logo, everything.
Absolutely.
On the show, Nigel.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we can do that. Anyway, Tapestry was great. Was great.
Sounds good. Yeah. Will they do another one next year?
I don't know. We have to ask to Robert Cosara.
I think so.
And
he mentioned
something about
yes.
It sounded like a big success, and
yeah.
they should probably do it again.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
Yeah. Sure. Absolutely. Cool. Well, anyway, we are here to talk about Santiago, not Tapestry, right?
That's true.
So I don't know. Maybe there are a couple of people in the world who don't know Santiago yet. So you might want to introduce yourself, Santiago, and tell to the world who you are, what you do.
Okay. Okay, Santiago Ortiz. I come from Colombia. But then I lived in several places, and I work in several places, including Spain. In Bogota, in Colombia, I studied mathematics, but from the very beginning, I knew I wanted to do different stuff from just doing mathematics or research or science. I had this idea of mixing math and music, or math and art, from the very beginning, right? Mm-hmm. In 99, still in Colombia, I found a company with a couple of friends. It was like web agency, very, very conventional. But I tried to do like different things. It was the time that when Flash was entering the scene, opening uh-huh. like interesting opportunities to create interactive stuff for the web, and I started playing with Flash, and then I co-evolved with it.
So did you start with Flash 3 timeline scripts?
Yes, very, very simple scripts, and from the very beginning I tried to use like mathematical tools, and it was very hard, very difficult, but then the tool started like evolving. Mm-hmm. It was quite interesting process, right? A lot of people like learn how to mix design, coding and math at the same time Flash was evolving, right? So at that moment it was clear for me that I didn't want to like to create websites as well. So I went to Spain in 2001, and I started living mainly as a teacher, like teaching interactive stuff for Flash, always introducing a lot of math in my classes, and also as an art and science researcher or something like that. Like I started working in projects that mixed art and science in different ways. I work a lot with the Media Lab at Madrid, which was or continue being a fantastic place to explore this kind of things. And then in 2005, I co-founded a company devoted, specialized in information visualization, interactive information visualization. I think it's the first one in Europe at the time.
Like, yeah, I would say so too. I sort of followed that at that time already, and I also remember there was Stamen in the US and there was Bestiario in Europe, and that was it.
So, yes, indeed. Yeah. And it was fantastic. It's fantastic to be part of a company that offers a service for a market that do not exist, right? It's an interesting adventure.
That's always either a really good idea or a really bad idea.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I will say it's always a bad idea, but you have a lot of fun. Something like that, I will say. It was really interesting, all the process, all the new things we discovered that were beyond the project.
It was a very research.
Yes, we did a lot
oriented
of research.
Company, yeah. Right? So you did a lot of projects from your own motivation, I think.
And also is the main way to build your tools in order to create project, yep. To create projects for clients as well. So you have to do that. If not, you don't have anything to show to people, and you don't have tools to answer to challenges, right? Yeah. So it was great.
And you sort of developed your own visualization framework as well.
Exactly.
Implemented all these algorithms and also these springy force layouts. They were very characteristic. So somehow, if you had seen them a few times, you suddenly knew, that's a Bestiario force layout type thing. So I remember
that.
Yeah,
I think so. Yes. Yeah. That's a strong identity. Yeah, yeah. And then with this framework you mentioned, we created a different kind of tool. It was a visual programming language to analyze, gather, and visualize information. At the time, the name was Impure. And Impure later evolved.
That's 2008, 2009, something like that? Or
no, 2011. It started in January 2011. And yes, in 2 years, it changed a lot. It grew a lot. And finally, the company took this, let's say, experiment or experimental product and converted into an actual project that is being commercialized right now, which is Quadrigram, is the new name.
Yeah. Yes. No.
At this very moment, I decided to leave the company because as the company will like specialize in a single product, and I am not really a product person. I prefer to create new things and a lot of new things. I like to be always involved in several projects at the same time. I decided to leave. So that was like 1 year ago, okay? And I also started like learning new technologies. It was the moment in which Flash was like start dying, you know? Like, and in particular for information visualization, it was no longer a tool. Like, it's at the same time JavaScript, HTML5.
It would cry.
Yeah, I'm still a bit sad.
It was. It's a sad story because Flash is
by now,
so important.
I do like my CoffeeScript and my D3, so I'm. I don't think about it that much anymore.
Yes, but I think for many of us, it was a traumatic, like process, metamorphosis. I was more scared that. And thinking that the process will be more painful than actually it was. Like right now, I feel very, very comfortable with JavaScript, right? So in a few months, I was able to build, a platform, a framework with all the tools I want to have, right? Like the 3D stuff, like the physics engine, like the, of course, the network engines that create and modify networks, but also visualize networks, etc. So in a few months, I had everything like set up or the basis. And then I spent like 6 months only researching, no client's work. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And you published a new project every 2 weeks or something. It was amazing to watch.
Something like that.
The last few months.
It was kind of crazy. I was with a lot of energy and very eager to like to produce stuff and to research and also I started with the question what exactly I want to do. Okay, so I my research was wide open. Like I tried to cover and touch very different topics. And I soon started like identifying what exactly is like my thing, the thing I am good, and this the thing really interests me. Okay, actually, it's not one single thing, but like some vectors I know identify. Okay.
Sure.
And here I am,
and that's a great strategy. Is just like spit out stuff and then see where that takes you.
Exactly.
And I think it's both like what you react to emotionally most,
exactly,
but also what people pick up. You know, sometimes you think one thing is the greatest thing ever and nobody cares.
Oof, all the time.
And other
it's
times,
incredible.
If we discuss that too, you do something like in an afternoon and people go crazy.
Exactly.
You know,
that it's happened
like,
to me a lot
what?
Of times. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, it's always good to have that sort of back and forth. Yeah.
Absolutely. The feedback.
I mean, when I saw all these projects coming from Santiago, I thought I was blown up. I couldn't believe it. There were so many objects coming every week, lots of new projects coming every week. And I think it's the perfect example and prototype of what you, Moritz, have been suggesting some time ago. I think even before starting Data Stories, I remember you mentioning the fact that one of the best moves you can do if you want to become a freelancer is to dedicate a lot of time initially to just spit new projects and put these projects
absolutely
let this project put this project somewhere live somewhere in a way that people can just see it and discover who you are, what you do. And I think that's still the best way, right?
Mm. And they become a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So
yeah,
if you do a lot of, I don't know, literature visualization or whatever, then you will be approached for that.
Yeah. Sure.
I totally recommend to all people that works creating visualization to do that to some extent. It's completely important. It also helps you define your tools and organize your tools. It gives you like interesting results that you can also like place in your portfolio, and that's also strategic. And it helps you discover business opportunities. For instance, you start working with books because you are just passionate about books, right? And then you start visualizing conversations in books. But then you realize that visualizing conversations in books is basically or structurally similar to visualizing conversations in social media. And then you eventually figure out like a new product or a way to take actual value for other people out of those ideas. Mm. So research and free research or experimental research, at least for some people, is extremely important. And then there is another reason, is motivation. If you are not working or or using part of your time to what you want to do, that motivates you, it's very hard to have energy to do the other projects. At some point, you will be like tired, right? If you are not choosing at all what kind of projects and with which kind of data you work, right? The third reason will be that it helps you keep motivated. If it happens that you don't work with projects that motivates you or data that is interesting for you, you will sooner or later lost energy. So it's also important to at least part of the week work on your own projects. Yeah,
no, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, this is something I wanted to ask to Santiago. So I know by talking with you that actually your process was really successful and you actually end up getting a lot of clients, and so it worked. One thing that I wanted to ask you is, during these initial 6 months that you devoted basically 100% to creating new projects and posting these projects on your website, did you also have a strategy in terms of targeting some specific domain because you thought that would be interesting to attract some specific kind of clients, or it was totally free, kind of like you just did what you liked and expecting that people just came in and be attracted and contacted you to propose some projects?
That's a good question. I started with very open ideas, but already strategic ones and already pointing opportunities for the future, okay? But I started with a concept, very wide concept, which is a knowledge visualization. I think that there is a kind of hypothetical axis which starts with data visualization, goes to information visualization, and eventually goes to knowledge visualization. I will define this like visualization in contexts in which you do not start necessarily with a specific data set, but with a cultural context. So part of the process is also to analyze, to gather, to find the data, to organize the data very well, eventually to build data, to converse, and to take into account a lot of important thing that are related with the knowledge context you are working on. So it could be, for instance, like an exploration in Wikipedia, things like that. You don't start you start with a goal or with a context. Yeah. For instance, an example would be, I want to build a map of sciences that not only displays the connections between sciences, but also the activity, the current activity, the real-time activity of sciences, of research, for instance. So this is knowledge visualization because you don't know where the data is. It's part of the project, right? So I had that in mind. Also,
And it's more like you start with a certain cultural phenomenon as a whole. Or
exactly.
Not a data set, but more a cultural
phenomenon. And that changes your approach and your activity as a professional, because you are not longer the visualization professional that receives a data set and gives you in return a visualization. It changes the relationship between the client and the professional. And that was also something very important I had in mind from the very beginning. And little by little, along the entire process of experimentation or research, that question was also part of the research. So it wasn't only that I was like playing with code. I was at the same time thinking a lot, taking a lot of notes, and heading this idea of building a strategy. And right now, as I already started working with clients, what I am doing is defining this platform. So my plan is, in 1 year, I will have a very different website from the one I have right now. Right now, what I have, you see, is like the portfolio of an artist or a researcher, right? All the projects are a research project. None of them is for clients, right? So in 1 year, I will have something much more clear for people mm-hmm. that want to work with me, like what I do exactly. And what is my methodology. Okay.
Sure. Another related aspects I wanted to discuss with you is that one thing I really like in your work is that to me it looks like you have a very strong branding. So most of the time when I see some of your projects, actually one person could come to me without telling me that this is Santiago, and I would actually guess, yeah, this is Santiago style, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think this is a pretty unique feature of your work. Is it something that you do on purpose, or it just happened this way?
Not at all. In fact, I try to do the opposite, but of course it's hard to escape from yourself. For instance, in some projects I use a lot of very like bright colors, you know, and in others I do the opposite. In some projects I use this fish eye technique. In others, like, I totally ban this idea, etc. So I really try to be diverse, but of course, something happened. I think, yes, I have like an identity sign. I don't know, but it's other people that could see that. I don't see it. It's other people that see it. Okay.
Yeah. But I think
so. Can you tell us a bit what types of projects you're working on now? Like for clients, what types of things do people approach you with, and what are the things you're actually working on?
Okay, I will mention two projects that are really interesting for me. It's exactly the kind of work I wanted to do, and exactly the kind of relationship I wanted to build with clients. One project is for a company based in Belgium. The company is Shift N. Some of you might know it because they made a system map of the obesity. It's in Visual Complexity. It's a fantastic map of all the mm-hmm. complex relationship in the obesity issue, right? So they analyze future scenarios, they create system maps, etc. And I am working with them creating a tool that allowed them to take a big corpus of documents, actually not a big corpus, but a corpus of documents that can be big. And what you get is like different views of those documents. It's a syntactical and statistical analysis with visualization, mm-hmm. right? The good thing about this project is not only like the results are interesting, but also the way we are working is like we are testing the tool all the time with different corpora and mm. with different people. So it's something quite new for me, and it's exactly what I wanted to do. It's like,
but it's really like a software tool that can take arbitrary text and will produce a few visualizations. Oh, nice.
Exactly. So it contains different visualizations, which is something that I also appreciate. Like not only focus on one view, but create different things. So yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's one of the projects. The other is with Kenneth Couquier from The Economist. In that case, we work first trying to identify like new ways to use data about economic indexes or quality of life indexes, and try to find new ways to visualize them, like create a different story, okay, out of it. Mm-hmm. And we already found some interesting ideas. I can't comment, but I think that the result would be be really good. Okay.
Nice. Yeah. It sounds good. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So your plan worked out up to now.
That's great, actually.
Mori, so sorry. I think I lost you a little bit, but now I hear you. Okay.
Okay, cool. I just said your plan worked out so far.
Yes, I think so. Yes, it's working. Yes.
Very good.
So how long did it take before you started getting clients?
Well, in the process of being experimented, I already received mails from people interested in working, and that took a time, like start conversing with people, etc. So it's very difficult to measure because the time from the first mail to start working is usually a lot of months. So now I am working with people, but I first contact these people like several months ago. So it's like a like a very big machine that takes time to start like working. But the feeling, my feeling is that once it started working, it start like also having like a good pace. I hope so. I am really a beginner as a freelance, you know?
Yeah, it takes a while to figure it out. I mean, I'm still in the process and I've been doing it for 10 years now or something. It's like, oh man.
Oh man.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Never ends. But never ends.
No. The clients, they invent new stuff. They invent new tricks.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I don't have this problem here.
Yeah, that's but good. I guess
I have other interesting problems to deal with.
We had a few questions from Twitter, so let's ask these. So Kime asked, what tools are you working with, especially in the Nuke Twitter app? Thanks. So my guess is you write everything yourself, right?
Yes. And prior to start building this specific project, which is a network visualization, I work a lot on the network framework. Right, so it's not only that I build my tool, but I am trying to build a very comprehensive and well-organized framework, just as D3, not that complex or big, but it is comprehensive nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. And especially for networks.
Networks is a big part of the framework. Mm-hmm. Other big parts are text analysis, the 3D engine, let me think. Mm-hmm. A lot of geometry, a lot of mathematics. Yes, like I try to build something with a lot of specific solutions. So when I try to prototype something, it's not that I use very big modules already created. I use like tens of specific solutions that assemble. Like help me create something.
Ah,
okay. So for instance,
lots of helper functions for working with specific things. Yeah.
Yes. For instance, I do not have a visualization methods in my framework, but instead I have all the operations to create anything very fast, like a string graph, for instance. It's based on 4 or 5 classic operations, right? So I do not have the string graph a visualization method already coded, but it's very fast for me to actually.
It's more like a toolkit of little functions that help you assemble stuff.
Exactly, and the key is to organize well those little solutions. Yeah,
there's a danger there that you end up with PHP where everything is a function that has a funny name, and you always have to look up the funny names for the funny functions. Yeah.
No, I have a strong constraint.
And do you plan on publishing the tools? Or, I mean, I could imagine for clients it's a bit strange if they commission someone and they use their own framework and it's private. And, you know, it's like a bit...
Well,
unsustainable.
Yeah,
maybe.
So far,
I
haven't faced this specific problem because other clients will also find strange to use a code that others can use, like open source. Yeah. But nowadays, my feeling, but again, I am a beginner in this, is that clients are more open. They just want you to build the solution. Okay.
Yeah.
No problem. The code I deliver is minified. It's not readable, let's say, so no one can use it. And yes, I plan to open it, but it's a huge responsibility. It's very difficult.
I know.
You have to really organize things.
Yeah,
and
maintenance is
and
the biggest problem, right?
Yes, I talk with Nicolas Belmonte a lot about this. He has the experience of opening a framework, and it is a fantastic challenge. No doubt. But the way I will do it is it will be first like in an intermediate way, which is I will try to share these isolated tools, right? These specific solutions. So people will be able to pick, like copy paste these solutions. So that's that's a good way to allow people to use.
I think this is somewhat similar. I don't know if you've ever seen what these people at the GI Center in the UK published a number of libraries for processing. And it's not necessarily a whole framework, it's just a number of libraries, but these libraries are really, really useful and interesting. Are you familiar with that? You know these folks at the GI Center? Jason Dykes?
Have you ever
heard of
them? Yeah, I think they did something for like rendering really large processing sketches. Was that... Or like multi-screen, is it that thing?
Yeah, they have a whole bunch of libraries, but they are independent, basically.
Okay.
Yes, I am not familiar, but...
Also like Gregor, you know, he wrote Chroma.js, he wrote Cartograph. These are all like single-purpose libraries that helped a lot of people.
But they are still frameworks in the sense you have like to embed the entire logic, which is fantastic. Yeah. I'm not saying it's bad. It's something that I couldn't do right now. Anyway, and the way Enrico described these libraries sounds more like what I will do. It's like if you can use a single function and embed it in your framework and it works, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I think this is the main person behind it is Joe Woods, and I think I was searching for the link. I think the library is called GI Center Udils. So it's just a number of utilities, but it's extremely useful. Yeah. So I think this could also be a different way. Instead of trying to publish a whole framework as one building blocks, as you said, publishing single libraries. Yes, I think it's similar to what Gregor did in the past. And I think this works so much better.
Yeah, but I agree, it's a big responsibility. Yeah. I did open source quite a few of my projects, but I never really documented them and so basically that didn't go anywhere. So I know it helped a few people, but they had to sort of bite the bullet and dig through my code without documentation, which I feel bad about too. But it's like,
and that's the best of the cases in which go nowhere.
And then sometimes you also get like funny requests, like people complaining about the lack of documentation, or like, you know, like demanding that you fix bugs.
But that's exactly the problem. You can create frustration with your code.
Exactly, so, because you promise sort of that.
There is an implicit promise in the code you share.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Santiago, this is written in JavaScript or what?
JavaScript, yes.
Okay. Yeah, 100%. That's another thing. I think this is related to the branding thing I was mentioning before. Normally, most of your visualizations are really interactive. There is a lot of interaction, much more than we are used to. And I think this is another...
It's the good old exploratory stuff. I like that. I really love it.
Yes, that's part of the research, of course. Interaction. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, but I think also in terms of interaction... So I don't know how you feel about it, but in a way I have probably much less experience than you guys in implementing visualizations, because you do this every day. But my experience with implementing visualizations is that as long as you have to draw something, it's relatively easy. But as soon as you add a lot of interaction, it's a nightmare in terms of coding.
Yeah, indeed.
I think you agree, right?
Yes. No, I understand. No. I do not agree. It is not something that happens to me.
Okay. Anyway.
But probably because you think in code and in math straight away.
Exactly. The math saves me. It's the mathematics that saves me in that case. I have.
Yes.
How do you start a project? Do you open up a text editor or do you open up your notebook?
I have a notebook of ideas, 150 ideas of projects I want to do.
What you could do?
Yes. Uh-huh. Actually, I want to like make this notebook public. It could be interesting, yes. And eventually create like a platform for that, specific for that, in which people can comment or whatever. But that's...
Did you see the one Lynn sent us a few days ago? There is like a platform for writing ideas.
Exactly.
Right?
In fact, Lynn sent this to me, or I was in this tweet, because we had previously discussed about this tool. I will eventually publish. Yes.
Lynn who, guys?
Lynn Czerny. Yeah. She is Annika's on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. I know her, but I was.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Insider thing. Yeah, yeah.
No,
sorry.
But
And she sent us a link to a platform where you can get your network to help you decide what to write. So it's for writers. Uh-huh. But we could also use it for data visualizations because I think all of us have more ideas than time.
So. And you can use these. Yes, exactly. A lot of ideas and not that much time. You can also put questions. Like, for instance, if some of your projects require specific data that you don't have, it's a good place to say that, and perhaps someone will say your idea and will get you to the data you need. So it's nice to open the idea.
But if you want to form, so let's say you pick one of these ideas and you say, okay, now today I'll go for that type of visualization. What do you do first?
Well, it depends on the data. Mainly, but let me think on one example of something I want to do. One of my ideas is to create a map of Europe deformed by genetical information. This is an idea. I already have spotted the data. Okay.
How did you collect genetical information, you said?
Yes, because this is a classic procedure in genetics. It has a name and everything, in which you make a linear transformation to a map in order to make it match with the genetic data as better as possible. But the transformation is linear. I want to create a crazy non-linear transformation that will totally deform the map of Europe. And it could be done with the world, but Europe is perfect because genetic data spreads in Europe in a very coherent way with the geography, right? So it's an interesting research project. And in that case, first I identify the mathematical tools I need to eventually do that. And in this particular case, the mathematical tool I need is something that I could use in many other projects. It's basically the same problem behind the cartograms, in which you want to deform a map in order to guarantee that the surface in each sub-region is proportional to certain values. Okay?
Yep.
So I will build this, and you need to use physics for that. Right? Like springs connecting a very complex network. So I will have to go to this very abstract problem first in that case. And then I start using
and
specific...
And then you assemble your tools to do that and then you start...
Yes, I start with the framework. It's in general, it was like that. Like I start improving the framework and then as a second phase, I start working the specific project. Yes.
So how much time do you spend in proportion? So once you have an idea, how much time you spend in proportion in gathering the data, manipulating this data, and visualizing the data?
Oh, it totally depends on the project. In some cases, I have a lot of projects in my notebook that had already solved the problem of the data. Okay, so gathering the data won't be a problem in those cases, and this could be 1/3 of all these ideas. Okay, actually, sometimes I had the idea of the project because I found an interesting data set. Okay, that's completely normal. In other cases, it could go up to the 50% of the process. In some cases, this is like the main challenge of the project. But for instance, another interesting example is Lostpedia, which uses all the scripts of Lost series. It's a lot of dialogues, a lot of text. In that case, I started with data from Lostpedia, the Wikipedia for Lost, and they had all the script transcribed. And I thought I will have to spend 3 days organizing the data. But actually, it was pretty straightforward because these people did a great job and the format of the text was already very well organized. So gathering, scrapping everything took me only one day. And I created a JSON file containing all the script with the characters like identify for each dialogue, etc. Like the complete structure.
Wow.
Okay. It was only one day, but I was expecting like 3 days for this particular case.
Okay. And another thing I wanted to ask you is how much experimentation you have in terms of how to map any given data into a visual format. So I guess normally you already start from an idea of how you want to visualize this data and how much experimentation you put on it. So most of the time you basically realize what you have in mind, or you realize what you have in mind and then you discover that there is another way to visualize this data that is probably more effective or more interesting, or you start from the very beginning with different kind of visualizations and then you decide which one you like the most. How does it work?
Okay, I think one of the most beautiful things about our job is that you train your mind to create things that move, that have shape, that the change in size, in color, whatever. Very dynamic, geometrical stuff in your mind. And then you have to translate that into something that happens in your screen, right? And and with training, you actually arrive to a certain point in which at least some of the times you try to do that, you will build out something that actually represents what you had in mind. I think musicians go to similar processes, like very experimental musician can really imagine a melody with an harmony with everything sounding at the same time, and then they write the score, and then their orchestra sounds exactly the same way they had in mind, right? Mm-hmm. Very talented musician can do that. Okay, for an information visualization, that also happens, and that's interesting because this is like a second meaning of the word visualization. Is the capability make real you have in
it's actually the primary
mental
meaning.
Image. Yeah. But
yeah, if you search for visualization on Twitter
meaning.
Or something,
it's the primary
you get
meaning.
That much.
And I don't discard it a lot. Never. I like to use the visualization concept in its most like wide definition or set of definitions. And this one I think it's also useful because you are building mental images, and this mental process is something you have to train, okay? But nevertheless, sometimes...
But that's interesting, because I sort of try not to do that too
exactly.
much.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually... Yeah.
Because I wanna first see how the data plays out, you know, before I impose too much of my, you know, my vision on it.
Yes, that's true.
So it's. I think it has both.
The thing is it is interesting when you fail. So you have to be very honest with yourself and be capable to accept that you will fail with this mental image.
That vision didn't work out.
And also very clever to foresee new opportunities when that happens. So it's like you impose a shape to some data and it could happen that it works or not. If it doesn't work, perhaps...
Yeah.
You are capable to understand things about the data, like, okay, this particular data didn't work because of this or that. So the visualization or your try still say something about the data. And you can start with a different attempt, a different approach, right? But recently I had this experience and I am stuck, completely stuck with this data set. I think it's interesting I can share this experience. Working with my friend Mauricio Giraldo, he works at the New York Public Library with fantastic data sets. He plays a lot with data. He builds APIs for the data they have. And one of the most fantastic data set they have is about menus from restaurants from the entire century in New York. And they have all the dishes.
Wow.
Yeah. In each menu, and I took all the data, all the dishes,
nice.
And I said, of course, there are...
And you have the dishes and the prices and probably locations
everything.
Of the restaurants.
I was interested in
outside.
The... Yeah. let's give it a try because I totally failed. Okay, and it's sad. What I was looking for was for clusters, because I was completely sure, positive that I will found like clusters, like dishes that go together in menus that tend to go together in menu concurrent.
There was this whole story that the New York restaurants steal their menus, and you know that all these Chinese restaurants copy the same.
And
menus.
Then there is culinary logics behind as well. Right?
Yeah.
You can't just mix whatever. There are identities for restaurants, etc. But then I ran all my algorithms, my cluster algorithms. I didn't find anything of that. And it was very frustrating. But this is the example you just mentioned, Moritz, about trying to impose, in that case, not exactly a visualization method, but a structure. Try to really impose a certain
thing must be there, but it's not
there. It's not there. So you have to find a different approach. Indeed.
Yeah. And you're right, it's a lot about honesty to yourself. Like because you could always change the data a little or left part out so it fits your idea. But that's also something I tell my students. You shouldn't bend the data until they fit your mindset, but rather change your mindset.
Yeah, and I think
if the data tells you otherwise, right? So
I think what is really interesting here is that this means that it's not only playing with the visualization itself, how you visualize the data you have, but how you segment or process this data, or what kind of question you focus in, right?
Exactly.
So it's not only a visualization thing; it's more
it's a structural problem as well.
Yeah, it's a structural problem. Yeah. I agree.
No, absolutely.
Santiago, have you ever done any works that are not like information-based, but purely pure form, let's say, or pure generative design, data art type things?
Yes, absolutely. It's not a thing that really interests me because my feeling is that like you lack in those projects like an interesting cognitive relationship with people, okay?
Mm.
I don't mean that you have to use actual data, etc., to create interesting things. But at least from my point of view, or the attempts I've done in the past, they are just like aesthetical stuff. And I don't even do really great aesthetical things. So it wasn't that interesting. I think I have one project that I like, but somehow you can say it's information visualization because I am using a photography collection, which is external information. It is called Love is Patient. You can find it in my portfolio. It uses a collection of photography of faces, men faces, and I use the Voronoi algorithm. And I create a really strange like experience.
Ah, and you compose these images.
It's a collage.
Yeah, I remember. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe, okay. Santiago, can you...
That was a strange one.
Can you describe it more in details for those who are listening? Because it's really hard to imagine it.
Okay.
I have it in front of me, but it's really hard to explain.
It's very difficult to explain, but I prefer to talk about like the issues behind, like the concept.
Yeah.
Because I think it's better if people go to the portfolio and see it. But the challenge here is like faces represent a very strong kind of pattern for the brain, for human brain, and geometrical patterns as well. It's like your brain is very good in both situations, like identifying repetition or patterns in geometry, and in faces. But it's kind of opposite as a process. The later being extremely emotional and social, and the first one being very aseptic, right? Uh-huh. So what I try to do is like to mix both kind of tasks for the brain. So in that particular case, the brain is working with the Voronoi pattern and the faces pattern, trying to understand something out of it. So what I do is using this Voronoi algorithm, I can like slice different shapes, different polygons, and create new faces out of parts of the previous ones. So it's a collage. It's like a Frankenstein a photographic Frankenstein.
It's very irritating. Yeah,
it's irritating, exactly. That's it. Irritate.
Yeah, but it's true. That's not really an information visualization. No. It's more like, a media.
And that will be one of the...
A perception experiment.
One of the very few projects I will like feature from my work.
Yeah. I really, really enjoyed also your emoticon faces experiments, which, again, is not necessarily an information visualization kind of project, but it's really nice. I like it. I mean...
Great.
And again, I think it shows... I think that's another thing that I wanted to ask you. Many of your projects actually have this mathematical bent, right? I mean, I can clearly see. So honestly, before we started the episode, I didn't know that you had a background in mathematics, but when you mentioned it, I thought, well, it's so clear. Then, and in a way, what is really fascinating for me is the relationship between mathematics and art, because in a way, so people who have a mathematical background and do some visualization stuff or similar stuff or visual stuff more in general, they tend to be more artistic than people coming from other fields like design or even computer science. And for me, this is really, really interesting.
Well, I can't speak for other people, except for the fact that, yes, a lot of interesting things come out from mathematicians that try to apply this knowledge or these methodologies outside in other fields. But what I can say is mathematics is important in my job for many reasons, and I want to point just one, which is something that I am really into right now, thinking a lot about it. Yes, is the use of topology. Topology is you can define topology like a more open geometry, and a non-metric geometry. It's a kind of geometry in which you stress relationships and contenance, etc., and properties. Okay. And this is...
But like having elastic spaces.
Yes, this is the common entrance to topology through crazy surfaces and elastic spaces, etc. Yeah, yeah. Because the concept of elasticity, what says is that you can reshape things they continue being the same from the point of view of topology, okay? Because they preserve properties. They lost like metric properties, but the other properties are preserved. So this is like the entrance.
Like neighbors, they neighbors.
Exactly. This
they might
kind of relationship that you can find a path, a continual path between two points, things like that, right?
Yes.
So for information visualization, topology can help like finding new metaphors that are not basics, nor based in metrics. So it's like or unnumerization process, something like that, because some people at least tend to associate information visualization strictly with numbers and quantities, and I think it's much wider than that. And there are many things, and this is also related with this idea of knowledge visualization. There are many things that are not just quantities, yes, and that anyway carry information and meaning. Okay, and information visualization can find interesting ideas in topology.
I just realized that half of your work deal with that fact, probably, or that a lot of your work is also related to mapping rather than visualizing numbers. It's true.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot
of sense. And when you study numbers theory, the same thing start happening. That when you start, number theory is not about numbers, it's about relationships, structures. So again,
it's a fabric as well.
Exactly.
In a sense,
even in integers, only working with numbers, you will soon find that there are amazing structures and surfaces and properties, etc., going on. Only for instance in prime numbers. So topology is an interesting like source of thinking and inspiration as well.
Yeah. That's a really interesting perspective. Yeah, yeah, it's, there's something to it. And I think, you know, when people ask me how I got started, it's also this fascination for spaces, you know,
exactly.
that you have a coherent space and that space makes sense and you can explore that space. Somehow that's, I don't know, and I think for many people that has been the... Or it's like the key motivation to do information visualization, to create these spaces.
It's very stimulating, the concept.
Yeah.
I have a very specific question. This came into my mind while you were talking about mathematics and spaces again. So have you ever tried to do anything with Hilbert curves? I remember the pioneering work of... I think Daniel Kime first introduced many years ago the idea of using Hilbert curves in visualization as a way to arrange a very tightly packed number of items on a screen in a way that you can lay out them meaningfully and still get a very high density of information. So basically, for those of you who don't know what an Hilbert curve is, it's basically...
Including me.
Oh, please. Sorry.
Ah, you know it. You will see it and recognize it immediately.
But please explain.
Sorry, Moritz. Anyway, So basically a Hilbert curve is a way to take one single axis and turn it from 1D to 2D, okay? And probably, I don't know.
Folding
yeah,
and stuff.
By
yeah,
folding,
yeah. I just
by
Googled
folding
it. Yeah,
one
yeah.
single axis, you can go from 1D to 2D. And Santiago probably...
Yeah. And you can be in between an area and a
yeah,
line.
So you can,
like yeah,
you can sure. fill an area with one single line folded in many in many different ways, okay?
Martin Wattenberg did also something on tree maps with
yeah,
Hilbert
I
curves.
Think it was
a similar?
Jigsaw map. But the first person who introduced that in visualization was Daniel Kime, and actually he was trying to use these curves as a way to use pixel-based visualizations where every single item is represented with one single pixel, okay?
Yeah.
And
it's
interesting because when you play with one single axis, but then this axis is folded in a way that can fill up your screen, you can do a lot of stuff. And I'm actually surprised that nobody tried to extend this work today. I mean, it's really interesting.
And you think Santiago must
yeah,
be
yeah, I mean, that's an
guy.
Idea. Maybe Santiago, since you have this mathematical background and you're always doing experiments, I would like to see more on... No, honestly, I think it's kind of unexplored because there were this initial couple of studies and then people abandoned it. But I think there is more space for research there.
It's quite interesting, and this is going to be more one note in my ideas notebooks
so
for
Santiago,
projects.
I commissioned
yeah. Fantastic. I see some potential in this idea, which is basically the inverse path. If you have a space, imagine a map, a cartographic space, bidimensional. This is a way to linearize the space. It's the opposite, but it's
sure,
like you take this strongly, extremely long curve and you make it like a line. So you linearize.
Well, I think that's the way Hilbert curves are used in image processing. I think there are some methods in image processing that actually use exactly the same idea as a way to sample an image in a way that fills up the whole image, okay?
Exactly. For instance, fractals, according to certain algorithms, render that way. It's like you can see how the fractal is like increasing the resolution using this path each time in a further level. Let's put it like that. Yes, it is interesting. And I think Jason Davis can also do something with that because he also plays a lot
exactly.
with these kind of structures and his work is amazing. So,
another thing I wanted to ask you. Who are the let's say, the well-known visualization designers who have a mathematical background?
I can't answer that Moritz? Because one of them,
Jason Davis, for sure. I mean,
Jason Davis is very inspiring and is very stimulating. But the work that he does, I like the most, it's like a specific mathematic visualization, right? So it's very specific. But as a visualization, like professional, is Moritz, yes. Right.
I think Martin Wattenberg
he has a physics background.
I thought it was mathematics. I mean,
if you have a physics background, you have a math background.
Yeah. Ah, but you are asking me about a specific mathematical visualization or visualization in general?
No. I was thinking about
people with math.
Yeah. Ah, people with math. Well, math, I think Moritz also fit a little bit in that. A lot of his work, the FIFA project, has a really interesting triangulation approach to the globe. So he clearly also plays a lot with geometry.
No, but I meant people who have been trained in math, okay? Who have a background in math, yeah.
Well, I don't know for many people which is his background, but Jason Davis for like using mathematics is a really nice case.
But other than that, I couldn't think of anyone else either. So I mean, Martin is the token physicist, but other than that, yeah, it's funny. What do all the mathematicians do?
Or maybe Jen Lowe, I think she has a background in mathematics.
Jen could be mathematician too. Yeah,
I think she is mathematician. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, that could be. Yeah. So yeah, if you're a mathematician, let us know. We are looking for you.
Yeah.
We have a last question from Twitter, I think, and I'd like to hear that one too. So, Mr. Andy Kirk, visualizing data. He said he would like.
Oh, you don't
to
want
hear...
to mention Andy again. He's always here. Come on.
Yeah. He. Yeah.
You could have said another name.
Some guy on Twitter would like to hear Santiago's view on the difference between Europe, North America, and South America, because, you know, all these three different scenes, especially like the data scene, is there a difference in how people are, what they do, or is it all a big global party? What would you say?
I think it is a global party.
I think so.
Yes, it is. It's very difficult to, particularly between Europe and the United States, is so well, so entangled, so well communicated that it's impossible to find. I will point something.
Say,
this company, Shift N, for instance, for me represents a classic European approach to information, right?
Uh-huh.
Because more of the like the intellectual background they put on it, it's different. It's extremely difficult for me to explain that, but I see some kind of difference. I can compare this company with Seed Media, the people behind visualizing.org, because they have similar goals. But the difference are clear, like in the methodologies and the way they do the work. But this is not strictly related with information visualization. So, and then Latin America is like a question for me. I don't see a strong like scene going on here, like a lot of people or strongly communicated.
That's a bit of news graphics, so there's interesting news graphics
in Brazil, exactly. But
I think Alberto,
printing media.
Alberto Cairo, when he was here, he actually mentioned that there is a quite strong.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's clear, and they're super interesting. Yeah. And there were a few really good newspapers.
Yeah, but that's print media, very specific and not well connected with the world.
Okay.
It's very Brazil, let's put it like that. Yeah. I know specific people. I know people here in Argentina, for instance, Leonardo Solas, or that's perhaps the most common case, people from Latin America working in the United States. For instance, Nicolás Belmonte or Mauricio Giraldo are only two examples. Mm-hmm. Or Miguel Ríos that works with but there's no like Latin American like information visualization proposal.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
Ah, so maybe you need to build it up. Maybe you need to start a little school or an academy.
Well, this is very connected with something that I have asked myself, like, all the time, is about my relationship, the relationship between my culture and what I do. This is a question I carry for 20 years, right? Because I am different, and my culture is different, and the things I read and listen, at least many of them are different. My interests are different. My language is different. So, in some point, I expect that this like identity in the work that we talk about some minutes ago should also carry some kind of cultural values, assets. I don't know how that could happen, but in some point, what you are should be also expressing what you do, right? And but it's very difficult to really like understand. Also, as a mathematician, mathematics is like the most universal language we can figure out, right? So as a mathematician, it's a way to connect with like universal or Western universal stuff, right? It's very universal. So I don't know. It's a very difficult question. And also, I think anyone here in Latin America working with technology, with data, with information, with mathematics, with etc., with visualization, will use like the United States and Europe as the primary model. So this is very post-colonial scenario, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I feel the same. And at this, while we're all very connected through the work, and because the work we do is universal, I think that there's these strong ties. But on the other hand, like from a business point of view or collaboration point of view, I at some point I learned I work much better with Europeans.
Okay.
Because it's just the little things and, I don't know, the general style, somehow it works out better. So I love my Americans, but somehow the projects never work out that well. So
yes, perhaps it's because there is a paradox going on here, is that you, Moritz, being German, you are more exotic than I am. Because I...
That could
I can tell you that Germans are like quite exotic.
Yes, he's exotic.
But I mean, everybody has like a German grand uncle or something in the US. But you're right, the Latin culture is maybe more...
It's a mixture of Europe and the United States and some specific local assets as well. But it's, at the end of the day, it also depends of what kind of family, what kind of social strata you belong, etc. Sure, of course. Sure. But in my case, I studied in a French school. I was always in touch with like European assets, values, and also with the American pop culture invading us all the time. So at the end of the day, for me, I'm like in a middle point between the United States and Europe. When I traveled to Spain, I felt absolutely comfortable living there. And in the United States, I feel also very comfortable. I struggle a little with the language. I still have a lot to learn, but it's easy for me. I don't know. And so far with clients, it has been easy as well. Yes.
Nice. Yeah, it's great. And I mean, it's once again, we're reminded that it's really nice that we're able to do that.
Exactly. You know? That's fantastic.
Hop around the world and be in touch with everybody. I personally love it.
Enrico, how do you feel like living and working in America, New York?
Do you want me to comment on that publicly?
A little bit about yes.
No, like, honestly, I think I've been asked this question many times already, but I think I cannot really answer, because living in New York, I think it's different than living in the US, in any other place in the US. So here there is such a strong New York culture that I could speak for New York, not for
Waco, Texas, for instance.
Sorry?
Not for Waco, Texas.
Yeah, exactly. Nebraska or Wyoming or whatever. So I don't know. So far living in New York has been great. I mean, people are, there are so many different people. I mean, I'm not even sure you can talk about one single culture here. So you have everything. So you just get what you like and you stick with it. So.
But there is a culture, a business culture, and there is academic culture, and that is strong and is defined.
Well, I'm not too much exposed to the business culture here because I'm an academic, and I don't have too much exposure to the business culture. Okay, some people here complain that, I don't know, maybe some of the academic things here are too business oriented, but I never noticed that here so far. So for me, I mean, I'm almost always been in academia in my life so far, and I don't see very big differences. I mean, it's more or less.
Academy is a big country.
Yeah, maybe you should visualize that. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, transform the academic space.
Yeah. It's pretty stable a bit everywhere. So I've been in several countries so far, and people are quite similar in the way they behave in academic settings.
Okay.
As long as you spend 16 hours per day in front of your computer, people are fairly similar everywhere.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. In academic settings, you never get a lot of too much pressure compared to the business settings, right? But yeah, at the same time, this old freedom you have could also kill you. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think you, I mean, how long are you there? Half a year or something? Yeah. So, I mean, we'll have to also see how it plays out on the long.
Yeah, exactly. How it evolves, yes.
Yeah. Cool. Last question I have to ask you. Möbio is your nickname. Why is that your nickname? Is that because of Möbius strip, or is there any cool story behind it?
No, not at all. Is the Möbius strip, but it wasn't me that chose that name. Is the name of the first company I had in Colombia. And I kept the domain and the name. And of course,
so you were just
it fits well. Yes, but it wasn't me. It was like I'm an architect that chose this name, not the mathematician of the team. Yeah.
And now it's your brand. And
now it's my brand, exactly.
Nice.
It's like cool. That's cool. Okay, I think we can stop here. I would actually keep talking for another hour, but then it's probably too much. That's the thing with Santiago. You start talking and you never stop because it's so interesting. Exactly. So I think it was the same when we met at Tapestry. We started talking about what was it about Santiago? Mayors, the story of mayors in Bogota, right? That was fun. Peñalosa and the other fantastic guy. I could have talked with Marcus. You for another couple of days. Anyway, good. Thanks a lot for being here, Santiago. It's been great. And I want to explore more your webpage. You have so many projects that I didn't have time to look to all of them. But so
you didn't browse all 50 of them.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, guys. It was a fantastic conversation.
Yeah, it was fantastic to have you. So maybe we have to repeat it in a year or so when you're all business, enterprise, Web 2.0. I don't know what thing is up.
Okay. Yes.
And then we can.
And Enrico is completely tired of the New York culture. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And I'm waiting for the Hilbert Curve project. Okay.
I'm gonna try to do something with that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You need to. Okay. You have to.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. Bye, guys. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Ciao, hello.
Bye.